This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, we're obviously deeply concerned by this increasing number of targeted assassinations in Burundi. Many have been targeting high-level officials, including more recently the Brigadier General Karahuza.
That's Cecily Pouilly, spokesperson for the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Details coming up. Also, parliamentary debate in Turkey over new legislation affecting migrants came to a sudden halt late yesterday. And international and local artists in Ivory Coast paid final tribute to African music legend Papa Wemba. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour: UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein has condemned the increasing number of attacks against high-level officials in Burundi. There were two such attacks this week. Cecily Pouilly is the spokesperson for the High Commissioner for Human Rights. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa.
Well, we're obviously deeply concerned by this increasing number of targeted assassinations in Burundi. Many have been targeting high-level officials, including more recently the Brigadier General Karahuza, who was assassinated on Monday. There was also an attempt to assassination against the Minister of Human Rights the previous day on Sunday. So we are deeply worried because this seems to show that the situation in Burundi is going from bad to worse and is extremely dangerous and might well lead to more unrest.
Now, the situation started getting worse about a year ago once President Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term. And then we started to see more and more violence. Are we seeing anyone claim credit for these attacks?
Well, you know, the situation started, as you say, about a year ago. There were lots of demonstrations, massive arrests, and we did report about worrying information about torture cases and so on. Now, there were the December attacks, really around mid-December. There were attacks against military camps, and after that, the situation really significantly deteriorated. Since then, what we see is that kind of a tit-for-tat situation where you have security forces heavily deployed in Bujumbura, in provinces, massive arrests, and when you also have rebel groups who are claiming responsibility for some of these attacks. However, one has to note that in many circumstances, these assassinations are carried out by unidentified armed men. And, you know, it's very hard to establish responsibility for some of these attacks. This is also why we've asked for proper investigations, because the perpetrators need to be arrested and they should be brought before the law.
How concerned is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights that this violence will get really out of control and become a regional problem?
Well, you know, we're already seeing the regional impact. You have a large number of refugees, over a quarter of a million people who fled the country. We have over 500 people killed since April 2015, massive cases of arrest. So it's a very worrying situation. And we've been warning over the last few months about the potential of destabilization on the entire region. So for sure, we are closely following up this situation, and we really do hope that the upcoming talks in Arusha, who's, you know, is a very symbolic place since it's where the peace was negotiated after the civil war, you know, we really hope that all the parties will seize this opportunity to re-establish a meaningful dialogue. There is no other way around but finding a political solution to a political crisis and to improve the human rights situation on the ground.
Cecily Pouilly is spokesperson for the High Commissioner for Human Rights. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Burundians are set to commemorate the anniversary of the 1972 mass killings in which up to 200,000 people, mostly Hutu, lost their lives. It's the first time in more than 40 years that such a commemoration is being held in the country. A new victim group says the killings should be officially designated as genocide. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi experienced violence and mass killings 44 years ago, according to the final report by Burundi that was sent to the International Commission for Inquiry of the United Nations Security Council in 1996. The event was described as genocide. However, there is a debate whether the event meets the criteria to be considered as a genocide. Sambimana Francois is the head of the Victims Union.
Il y a trois critères bien précis qui caractérisent un génocide classique.
Sambimana says that there are three criteria that are well precise that the 1972 killings was a classic genocide. He says how it was the planned. There was a list of people who were selected from schools, hospitals, military bases, and taken away by the military vehicles who had names of the Hutu. There was no civil war in 1972, but the army used it to arrest, pinpoint people, and kill them, he said. The United Nations Genocide Convention defines genocide as acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. However, the debate over terminology continues. Families of those who lost their loved ones in 1972 will march tomorrow on the streets of Bujumbura. They will visit the reported mass graves of Hutus in Bujumbura. Mr. Sabimana says, however, that not only Hutu civilians were killed, but also Hutu soldiers.
Abasirikare babishe gute icyo nikibazo beshi bibaza nje ndacishuriraho.
He says, how were the soldiers killed? This is the question. No Hutu soldier remained. He says, the Hutu soldiers were taken for military training and were separated from the Tutsis. They were not armed and out in one column and shot dead. The commemoration of the mass killings comes in the midst of the current political crisis that began a year ago after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek for another term in the office. More than 500 people have been killed in the violence since then. Sabimana says the authorities should carry out investigations and bring the perpetrators to justice. Not all the perpetrators were Tutsi and not all the victims were Hutu. Both Hutu and Tutsi died in 1972, but the vast majority of deaths occurred among the Hutu population. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Parliamentary debate in Turkey over new legislation affecting migrants came to a sudden halt late yesterday. The Speaker of the Parliament ended debate after members of the ruling party came to blows with opposition Kurdish members. The fight began when a pro-Kurd party member accused the government of killing Kurdish civilians during military operations. Debate will now resume on Monday. The agreement would complete plans for deportation of migrants from Greece. In return, the EU would give financial aid to Turkey to help the migrants there and allow visa-free travel to Turkish citizens as early as next month. Meanwhile, in Vienna today, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon warned of growing xenophobia in some EU countries where lawmakers weigh new border restrictions for migrants. Austria is considering tighter entry rules for migrants and is considering building a fence at the Italian border in the Alps. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has criticized the Austrian moves. Animal rights groups around the world have long raised objections about the way many circus animals are trained and treated. Some, like the Los Angeles-based Animal Defenders International, have pushed to make it a crime to mistreat animals in zoos, circuses, and other entertainment venues. In the South American countries of Peru and Colombia, where strict anti-animal cruelty laws are now in effect, several circuses have recently been raided. Authorities confiscated 57 African lions and other animals. Tomorrow, the lions will be put on a specially outfitted plane in South America and flown to the Emoya Big Cat Sanctuary in South Africa. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Matt Rossell, campaign director for Animal Defenders International.
We're kind of a holistic group. We start with investigations. We find out what's happening behind the scenes. We take that evidence to governments of all sizes, and we use it to inform them to pass animal protection laws. And then wherever possible, we enforce those laws and we rescue the animals.
Are these mostly wild animals or also what we think of as domesticated?
ADI focuses a lot of our attention on animals used for entertainment, and specifically the animals abused in circuses. Most of them are the wild animals, and, you know, a law is only as good as it is enforced. And so in the case of Bolivia and now Peru, we have gone in and, with the governments, fully enforced the law, raided the circuses that were defying the law, rescued those animals. And this project we're doing that's launching this weekend is a culmination of years of work in Peru. We're airlifting 33 formerly abused circus lions from Colombia and Peru to their new forever home at Emoya Big Cat Sanctuary in South Africa.
Is it your position that any circus animals are abused by definition, or is it the way these particular lions were treated that you're against?
Unfortunately, the tools of the trade for the training a circus animal are weapons. Whips, electric shocking devices, bull hooks on elephants, which is a club-like device with a sharp hook on one end and a point, and food and water deprivation is very common. These wild animals do not want to do these unnatural tricks, and they start when they're very young. That's how they can control these wild animals when they become adults. They dominate them for their entire lives. And so that's why we're seeing so much sweeping changes around the world, because people are starting to understand that you can't really do this humanely. And it's not just the training. The travel is very stressful for these animals because, as you can imagine, when they're not in the ring performing, they're on the back of a truck or in a trailer in very small accommodations, small cages, elephants chained the majority of their lives on the road. And these types of conditions are detrimental to their well-being. And we see these behaviors that are indicative of poor welfare, the rocking and pacing. But specifically with these lions, they've been so abused. Almost all of them have been mutilated to remove their claws, which is very painful and debilitating often in later life. One of the lions lost an eye. Another is almost blind. Many have smashed and broken teeth because in some of the abusive training, they get their teeth broken. So we've had to bring in dental veterinarians to correct some of these issues. It's a real exciting culmination of this project to be able to take these lions that have really endured hell on earth, and now they're heading home to paradise. It's really going to be great.
What about the logistics of transporting 33 lions? I mean, I can't even imagine what that must be like inside the airplane.
Well, yeah, I mean, just that part of it, of organizing the aircraft, we've had to hire custom aircraft that can take them all, and it's a chartered flight. And all of the lions will be they'll be situated nearby family members so that they can all see other lions that they're familiar with to make them more comfortable. None of the animals are sedated. It's much safer to transport these wild animals fully awake. And so we do everything we possibly can to do it as quickly as possible, and the timing of everything is so well coordinated. And of course, as you might imagine, this has been in the works for months and months, years even. Personally, I can say I'm so excited because tomorrow I get on a flight to go down to help with the loading, and I'm so thrilled. It generates such an emotion because these lions are all individuals, you know, and they don't even know yet, but they are going to the most fabulous sanctuary and really going home to where they evolved to live. In a climate and in the savannas of Africa. Now, of course, we can't let them go. They're going to be in safe enclosures, but it's as close to a wild environment as any captive lion could ever hope to have.
That was Matt Rosell, campaign director for Animal Defenders International. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Meanwhile, in Kenya, a high-level conservation summit is underway. The so-called Giant Summit will focus on combating poaching. Twenty past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Before the body of African music legend Papa Wemba was taken to the Democratic Republic of Congo for burial, international and local artists in Ivory Coast paid a final tribute to the musician known as the King of Rumba Rock. Emily Ayoub was at the overnight concert in Abidjan.
The crowd encouraged the members of Papa Wemba's band to perform despite their grief as they stood visibly emotional on the stage surrounded by flowers. A few thousand people, all dressed in white, came to pay tribute to one of Africa's most famous musicians. The message on their t-shirts and on the stage read, "We mourn you, long live Wemba."
C'était un grand monsieur de la musique. Mais malheureusement, il est parti. Donc, nous sommes là.
Audience member Adenaka says Papa Wemba was a big man of music. Sadly, he's gone, he says, so they are here to pay him the stirring tribute he deserves. For young local musician Eric Kwasi, Papa Wemba was an inspiration.
On a tous connu ce monsieur quand on était très petit. Il nous a bercé avec ses mélodies, ses compositions.
We have all known him since we were little, Kwasi says. We grew up with his music and his melodies. His death really affected us. That is why we came to give support. Officials and artists took turns praising the man known for his Congolese rumba. Africa mourns a son, Ivory Coast mourns a brother, and the DRC mourns a father, said one presenter. Papa Wemba, whose real name was Jules Shungu Wembadio, died Sunday after collapsing on stage. He was performing at the Femua Music Festival, organized in Abidjan by another legendary African musical act, the Ivorian band Magic System. Wemba's family was present at the wake in Abidjan, dressed mostly in black and sitting in the front row.
Papa Wemba voulait mourir sur une scène. Nous ne devons pas être tristes. Nous devons être plutôt fiers.
Music System band member Al Salfo says that Papa Wemba wanted to die on stage. He says we should not be sad, we should be proud. If the biggest artist of African music decides to die where Magic System was born, he said it means he wanted to send a message. The celebration lasted until dawn before Wemba's body was flown home to the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was 66 years old. Emilia from UN News in Abidjan.
Since Monday, fighting has been reported along Senegal's border with the Gambia between Senegalese troops and rebels of the Movement of Democratic Forces of the Casamance, or MFDC. The military says it has killed dozens of rebels and destroyed marijuana plantations, mostly around Bignona. It is the second largest town in the Ziguinchor region in the southern area of Casamance. The city is also a base of rebel activity. The military says a couple of Senegalese soldiers suffered minor injuries but inflicted heavy casualties on the rebels. This week, reporter Alpha Diallo is in the region and visited the town of Velingara Dioba, about 85 kilometers from the fighting. He tells VOA's William Eagle that at the town market, he spoke to several people who fled the violence.
We went to several people from the south region, from Guinea-Bissau, Gambia, and northern Senegal. They all come back here for this open market day. There is a lot of people, and I also met a lot who came from the Bignona area, and I asked them about the recent escalation of violence in the area, and some of them just said that it was fierce fighting, and it is still going on. Some of them told me how many villages near Bignona who have been traumatized by the recent fighting has fled to bigger towns because they said that the rebels have been traumatizing them for so many years. because most of those people who live in there are farmers. They also have big herds of cattle, and the rebels were also involved in, you know, cattle rustling for so many years. They've been taking large part of these cattle and sell them to neighboring Guinea-Bissau.
You said that the Senegalese military destroyed marijuana plantations near the town of Bignona and also cracked down on illegal logging. Is that connected to the Casamance, the MFDC rebels?
Illegal logging of timber is highly connected with the activities of the MFDC. For so many years, they've been doing that. Although the Senegalese government said that it is illegal, but they have been doing that because they've been logging these things, trying to sell them to people who are crossing from the border, from Gambia, coming to Casamance, getting these things very cheap from them, and then go and sell these timber to market in Gambia, in northern Senegal, Saint Louis, and Bour, and other big towns in Senegal.
And about the marijuana, did you say that the marijuana plantations are controlled by the rebels or that the rebels profit from them?
Yes, the rebels are making a lot of profit from the marijuana because when they are making big farms, marijuana farms in the Bignona area, and then when they harvest this, they use, you know, I mean, motorized canoes to transport these products to other parts of Senegal, mostly by boat, and these are the profit they are making.
Do the rebels often travel across the border into Gambia? And if so, does the government in Banjul help Senegal in capturing them or turning them over to Senegalese authorities?
In most quarters, ordinary Senegalese often said that MFDC rebels occasionally settle in and out of the Gambia. However, this accusation has not gone well with the Gambian authorities. There are accusations and counter-accusations from both Dakar and Gambia. Dakar saying that the Gambia government is aiding and abetting Casamance rebels, while also the Gambia government is saying that the Senegalese government in Dakar is helping dissidents based in Dakar here.
Are there any talks taking place between the government and the Casamance rebels?
The last talk, as we know, has been going on between the Casamance and the MFDC rebels was in October 2014. Those were the latest talks, which were brokered in Rome by the community of, I mean, Saint Egidio, a charity institution which has very strong ties with the Vatican. Now, those talks were brokered last year, since that they are still holding, although the government of Senegal, they are still trying to make sure that they are talking to the Casamance rebels and telling them about, you know, greater regional autonomy for the region. But some of the hardline rebels are still saying that they want an independence for Casamance.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo reporting from the town of Velingara, Diobi, in a border region close to the Gambia. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.